I didn't think of it as building a business. I thought of it like there's a lot of interest around these products. And so I was like, this excitement means that there's probably more people that are willing to use their spare time to build this.
This is Contributor, a podcast telling the stories behind the best open source projects and the communities that make them. I'm Eric Anderson. Today we have Didier Lopez, the creator of OpenBB, on the show. Welcome, Didier.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me.
You've created quite a stir in the open source community. OpenBB is quite popular. Tell us what OpenBB is for the unacquainted.
Yeah, so OpenBB is an open source investment research platform. So we started in Christmas 2020. I started working on this project called GameStonk Terminal that went viral very early on. And today we are the number one open source project in finance, in the finance category, with over 25,000 stars and 200 plus contributors and thousands of users.
Yeah, it's amazing. Tell me about your background. Eventually we'll get into what OpenBB is and isn't, but I think your background's kind of unique in that you've spent some time in finance and software development, if I recall.
So I actually don't have a background in finance. So Basically my background is engineering. I'm originally from Portugal. I did my master's in control systems at Imperial in London. And basically, when I left university, I was really excited about the field of AI, particularly like AI, self-driving cars. And I accepted a role as a software engineer for a GPS positioning company, working on the algorithms using like C++ to develop code. And then I went into sensor fusion engineering. But I was really excited about AI. So I started learning Python on my spare time, and I was sharing what I was learning on my LinkedIn. And then basically one day, my previous maths teacher and statistics teacher from the Portuguese university reached out to me saying that he was working on his PhD thesis, which was around modeling and forecasting of financial time series using neural networks. And he challenged me to help him because he knew the concepts, but he wasn't into coding. And I was like, you know, this is perfect because it's like what I'm interested in is in AI. I would be learning Python for a few months now, and this is the perfect opportunity for me. So I started working with him on that. And after a year, I was like, I really enjoyed what I learned. But the thing is, financial time series is just such a small thing within the whole like investment thesis when you invest. So after that, and because I had been working for a year, I had some savings at the time. So I was like, you know, now I need to start learning more. So I started learning about like fundamentals, start learning about like, you know, options, like dark pool, technical analysis. And the thing is, I started actually really enjoying what I was learning. I was using Reddit a lot to learn as well. The thing is, coming from an engineer perspective, everything I did at the time was like optimized for efficiency. You know, you do these programs, you use like continuous integration, continuous development, and everything is fast. You learn the shortcuts and you do things fast. But then I went into research and everything is like manual. And like, there's a lot of work that is wasted in a way that I cannot reutilize. So like my typical workflow started at like 30 minutes research. But the more I learned, the more big the workflow became. And there was no automation in that process. So I would have to open several dashboards, take a screenshot, drag it into a Word document, write some notes. And then if I wanted a different ticker, I would have to do all of it again. There was no automation on that perspective. And even the same ticker, like next week or 2 weeks after, if something happened in between, like the analysis I had done didn't really matter anymore because it was already outdated. So I was struggling with it because I had a full-time job, and I was like, how can people stay on top of the field all the time when they need to do so much like automated work? And I looked for solutions and I didn't find anything. Even if I could afford like a Bloomberg, like, it didn't really allow me to the level of customization that I wanted. And so I grew with that pain, and I was like, I had my notebook. I started like writing notes on what my process is. And basically I was just like repeating that process all the time. And so then this was during COVID, my flight got canceled. So I couldn't visit like my parents, which was the plan in Switzerland. And so I had a full week on my hands, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to start building this. And I went to GitHub to look for a project that I could build on top of. And I didn't find anything that suited my needs. The closest one was probably Yahoo Finance repo, but it was Yahoo Finance repo. So like, even though it's not an official source, it's unofficial, like it didn't allow me the customization I needed because it was focused on the data that Yahoo Finance gave. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna start this from scratch. And then the first problem I had is like, okay, now I get why companies, you know, don't really allow you to take control of the data and do whatever you want, is because the data is expensive. And so most of these companies that I were using to take a screenshot and put on the word, like they only have like display rights in terms of the data. And so that was the tricky part. I was like, okay, so how am I going to build anything? Because I don't want to pay for a lot of data that I'm not sure if I'm going to use in the future. So I went to a few data vendors, website data providers, like for options, you know, financials, even scrap data at the time. And I understood like what their business model was. And their business model is very simple. You sign up, they get your information, and in exchange, they give you a free API key. And that free API key allows you access to a limited amount of data. And from my perspective, I was like, that's perfect. Because, you know, this amount of data is enough for me to understand if there's enough value for me on it. And if I'm like, you know, doing a lot of research and using these endpoints, I mean, I don't mind paying for it, like, or paying for a premium API key because I'm taking the value out of this data. And then the interesting thing is that all the other data vendors have a similar model, but the data actually doesn't correlate with each other. So if you actually look into all of these different data vendors, they offer the free tier with different data sets. And I was like, that's perfect. That's where I'm going to start. And from a technical perspective, it's just an API key. So if I upgrade to a premium, then instead of having 5 years of financials, I may have 30. Instead of being able to do 10 requests per minute, I can do like 100 because I pay for a premium. You know, but it's very easy. And so that's kind of the assumption of what I started. I called it like GameStonk Terminal at the time. I built it for 2 months on my spare time. I was like super excited about it. And then I open sourced it because I thought that it was enough for people to understand where I was heading with it, which was like, you could understand that I made like this kind of path convention that basically, okay, you have stocks here and then you go and you have like a menu that is like technical analysis, another one that is like fundamentals, another one that is like a discovery at the time, another one that was options. And then within all of these, you'd have commands. And so basically you could use a command line interface because I was proficient in Python. So I did Python end to end because it was the fastest way for me to play with the data. And so, yeah, I released it and then we went viral. That was the beginning.
Going back to the data problem, you're saying that the incumbents, the existing alternatives, charge you a high price in order to use the app because you might consume lots of data and the data is expensive. But you're saying you didn't necessarily need all that data up front.
Kind of. So there's multiple data models. So for instance, let's say that you have financial data that you get and you want to display it. So it depends. First, if you're just using for yourself, you probably don't need any license because you can't argue that it's not for commercial use. But if you are showing it to a lot of users, then you need a commercial license. And that's called like a display rights license. And then if it's like, for instance, historical data, which is data that comes from the exchanges, you not only need to pay for the data vendor where you're getting the data, but you need to pay for the exchange, the feed. Okay. And then basically, if you allow people to download it, so if you on your app, you have a button that allows you to download that data, then you need redistribution rights. And that's way more expensive. And so there's kind of layers, but this adds up really fast and can get really, really expensive. Because, you know, the redistribution, you could argue that someone could just download all the data and, you know, spin up a different app. And so those data costs are usually much, much higher. And Bloomberg, for instance, allows this, but they rate limit you. So you are not allowed unlimited redistribution, if that makes sense.
It does. And how do you address the data in OpenBB? Is it like a bring your own API key or?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. So you install the terminal locally on your machine, and then you manage your API keys. And because it's meant for you to use for your own use case, you are fully liable for it. And OpenBB ends up just being the middleman like architecture to have access to the financial data. So for instance, a common question that people would ask us, because after that we built like our SDK, the platform that you can build on top, and people would ask us, oh, so I can just, you know, set up my API keys and build an app on top and commercialize it. And I was like, well, from OpenBB side, you can, but from the data side, you can't. Because when you get that free API key, you know, you're signing up for the license agreement, you're signing up for it. And that license agreement doesn't allow you to commercialize. It allows you to use it for your own personal use case or evaluation purposes. But then if you want to actually commercialize, you need to pay for a premium service.
Got it. Yeah, no, clever. So you allow people to kind of sort that out on their own, which means you can offer something more or less free without having to worry about a business model around the data. You do that, you launch it, and it's just you, and you push out this open source project during COVID, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
I'm gonna draw a little bit, Didier, from a talk you gave at Web Summit recently. In it, you mentioned how important the name was, yeah. GameStomp. So, I mean, clearly it's related to GameStop, which was trending at the time, probably?
Yep.
I mean, your initial users, what's the overlap with people who are excited about GameStop at the moment?
Oh.
I mean, is it 100%?
probably like 90%, yeah. Because the thing is, I've been pushing like open source projects since I left university because I was learning on my own, right? And they would get like 1-2 stars, and I was just on my LinkedIn. It was very small reach. And I did the same for this one. And so when I actually pushed it, there was not a lot of traction. The thing is, I learned so much from Reddit, and because I was on the old GME saga, so I spent a lot of time there and understanding how, like, the conspiracy theories that all these people had. But I learned a lot on, and so I thought, you know what, I'm going to put this on Reddit because I learned a lot from these folks, and they might find this platform useful to help them automate the way to do research. And so when I did that, that's when the terminal really exploded. Like, we had like 4,000 stars in less than 24 hours, which was absolutely insane. I mean, today, probably that number is not as crazy because of all these AI projects gathering that amount of number. But it was back in December 2020. I think 4,000 stars at the time within 24 hours was pretty impressive. And it was interesting because that you mentioned about the GME correlation. Because so I put it on Reddit, we went viral there. Then someone commented, oh, you should put it on Acre News. And I was like, oh, really? Okay, I'm going to try. I just copy paste.
Yeah.
And it went viral there too. And I was like, this is wild. And after that, Vice Magazine picked it up. They picked up the hype and they did a post on it. But on the post, they called the terminal, if you actually read the article, it says that it's a terminal to do research on GME, which wasn't true. You could do research on GME as you could do on Apple or Tesla or any other ticker. But because of the name, they just assumed that and they wanted to come up with the news fast. So they just put it out there. And that also got like a lot of visibility, but it was funny.
Okay, so you give some advice in your talk that you should do certain things before you go public. You should have this MVP. You should have maybe contribution things ready, a Discord ready. Did you have all those? I'm guessing no.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So these were learnings you did kind of developed over time.
Yeah. I wish I had, because that I didn't capture nowhere close to as much of the people that wanted to sign up at the beginning as I could have, you know? So for instance, the Discord came out of needs because a lot of people started asking for it. And I was getting like a lot of emails and pull requests and features. And like, I had an idea, but people didn't really know what my idea was because I didn't really have a channel. Like GitHub is not really the place to be, to have like a, you know, a like real-time conversation and discussion, you know? And so that came a couple of weeks after because people were like asking about the roadmap. And I didn't even have like really a roadmap. I think I had some... The documentation was the markdown throughout the GitHub repo, you know? So I had like the terminal structure in terms of like menus. It was organized into folders. And then in which folder on GitHub you'd go in and you would have basically the documentation associated with what commands and menus you'd find within that architecture. But it wasn't prepared for scale because I didn't expect to need that scale, if that makes sense.
Yep, totally makes sense. So open source has historically been associated with infrastructure and people who are in the process of building things. Users of financial terminals haven't always been engineers necessarily. They've been investors and financiers. So did you tap into more of engineers who wanted to be investors or investors who were willing to code or one group or the other? I mean, what did the initial user group look like?
Yeah, kind of both, to be honest with you. So one of the bets I've made as well at the time was that Python was going to be big. And so even when people pushed for building like a you know, something on like JavaScript as a front end, I actually wanted to keep it Python because I said, I think Python is going to be big in finance because at some point, like, you're going to tap out in terms of what you can do on Excel in terms of automation. And so Python is the next best thing. And I think it was a good bet because today you're seeing like Python being integrated on the CFA program. And now most people from the financial world like are either getting into Python or already have some Python experience to do some things. And so for me, that was kind of important. And then that's one of the other like learnings is that I didn't really have analytics at the beginning. So I only knew from people that were reaching out who they were. And there were a lot of retail investors from the old GME saga. But there were also, one thing that I realized from the emails that I was getting is that there were also some people from JP Morgan's at Goldman Sachs that were using the terminal on their spare time, you know, when they got home. Or students, for instance, quite a few students were reaching out to me saying that, you know, they had this coursework to work on and they just wanted to have access to these financials to basically finish the coursework. So there was kind of a big breadth. But it's interesting because... In a way, so it was a command line interface. So the user experience like is not as like seamless as like a web app, you know. You have to like, it's a bit more technical, which is the angle that you brought up. So when we talked more with these like more like senior enterprise, like financial investors, like they didn't really like the interface. But then on the other side of the spectrum, you had people that absolutely loved it. And so we've always been between these like love and hate. There was not many people that were in the like indifferent to the terminal experience.
You mentioned also creating content, responding to feedback. I think these are kind of community development exercises, but you're a one-man team at the time. And I'm curious how you go from writing code 100% of the time to what's the split in the early days? It's like half community work, half code, or is it just like all community?
No, it was, yeah, half community, half code would probably be a right answer. So I had a full-time job. So basically I would like wake up a bit earlier before my job started. I would reply to the community. Then on my lunchtime, I would do community replies. Then my work would finish like at 5-6 for most of the days. Then I would reply to the community until dinner. And then all the time after dinner was spent like working on code, on features until like, you know, I don't know, 2-3 a.m. And then I would wake up other day. The month after was really rough time-wise. Like I couldn't do anything. Like personally, my weekends were in front of the laptop because there was just a lot of community and I didn't want to, you know, push people away. But yeah.
Yeah. You've already expressed, you're like, oh, I wish I had a Discord up. I wish I had this up. So I can imagine the whole time you're like, I need to get these things done while the people are still here.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't sound like you went into this with like, I'm going to build a big business. And so I'm curious when you started to feel like I'm onto something, this could be a company, and what that looked like.
Yeah. So when we got like the big traction, like for me, that was wild, you know, that was like, oh, yeah. Okay, there's a lot of interest around this tool. Because like, you know, starting a project, like we think of it like, okay, you know, it's just a startup. But like at the end of the day, like someone that is kind of a developer has to go onto your project and put a star, you know, so that shows interest. It's not just like, you know, seeing a website and then just closing it. Actually, they need to start because they want to show that, okay, I actually want to track and I'm interested in these. And so that first like blow up at the beginning, I was like, okay, that there might be something here. I didn't think of it as building a business. I thought of it like there's a lot of interest around these products. And for me, that was perfect because what I was interested in is on building this for myself primarily. And so I was like, this excitement means that there's probably more people that are willing to use their spare time to build this. And so that was kind of the first reaction. But then I think that when I actually thought that we could build a big business was when most of the PRs and feature requests and stuff, they were kind of small, like small fixes or an addition of a command. And I remember one day I woke up and I saw like, I would check the GitHub first thing in the morning and I saw there was a PR adding a full Forex menu. Like I had never traded Forex in my life. And someone understood what I was aiming for, understood the architecture, and they added a full Forex menu with like, I don't know, 10 commands with I think one or two different data providers. And I was like, oh, well, this is huge because this person very likely spent like days working on this integration and they had to read the documentation, understand I was working on the architecture. And I was like, okay, this could potentially be big because there's more people that are, you know, on the same boat as I am. And like more proof than the star is actually someone spending this much amount of time or their like family or friends time to work on this. And I think that's kind of when I thought that, okay, we maybe have a shot at this.
Yeah, that would be super exciting. And Forex meaning foreign exchange. So, you know, trading in currencies around the world.
Exactly.
And I mean, you were kind of an investor then. You were building this in part for your own personal investments. Taking a step back from like software development, how has your kind of investing hobby changed over the course of this? I imagine at some point you kind of spend less time researching certain tickers and more time responding to the community and writing code.
Yeah, so this was happened like pretty fast. So I finished the thesis with the teacher and then I was only a few months spending time on research. But that month, like my pain was like growing. And then it hit Christmas, which was when I started developing this tool. And so I stopped pretty much researching because I was so excited about building the tool first. And I was like, okay, I'm going to build this to a point that I can now automate everything, you know? And so I started building that. And then after 2 months, like even my girlfriend at the time, now wife, was like a bit upset because we didn't have a lot of time to hang out. And I said, okay, I think the terminal now is in a good stage. I'm going to make it open source and now we can do more things together. And now I'm going to, like, you know, still grow the project, but I won't use all of my spare time to work on it. You know, I'm going to balance it a bit more. But then because of the explosion of like people, it ended up not happening. Like I ended up not spending the amount of time that I wanted to do research because there was so much inbound like feature requests and pull requests to review and people wanting to add new data sources, new feeds, like because there was some scrapping data, you'd need to maintain some that changed the interface in the front end. So yeah, I ended up not even using it like straight away for research. I only use it after when we raised money and I had a team, then I went back to spending more time doing research.
I came into this interview thinking that, you know, because I'm late to discovering the project, it's got a user interface now. It looks like an app. And there's a lot of open source apps these days. And I wonder if there's some debate about how important it is to be an open source if you're an application and your users aren't programming much. In your case, it sounds like your users are programming quite a bit. And your initial users were all using the CLI. So it doesn't quite apply. But as the project's grown, I'm curious what you think about the value of open source for some of your kind of less programming audiences.
Yeah, so to be honest with you, what we soon realized is a lot of people that were using the CLI, what they were doing was exporting the data because they either wanted to process it on Excel or they wanted to have access to it on a PNG that they could put on a report. And so even someone that used to work like at BlackRock, what the person did before we did it was they forked the project and they basically cut the CLI to basically just use the data, the model view controller architecture to ingest the data onto like a notebook that they could then process the raw data and use Python to build, because the command line interface, you know, is all Python, but you have an interface that you can use. And once you get the data, you know, you can't really work on top of it. And this person wanted to work on top of it. And so once we realized that, we actually started working more towards becoming an infrastructure, a platform that people could build on top of. And so in a way, the terminal is just a wrapper around that platform where you can access financial data. So currently today, there's the command line interface, which is we call the OpenBP terminal. But at the end of the day, it's a wrapper around the platform that gives access to these financial data connections. And last year, we actually spent quite a few resources in making it modular enough so that people can build extensions to it. And it becomes like an ecosystem where, you know, if you are interested on fixed income, and you have a data source that you are integrated, you can just build that extension. And now people that install the platform, they can add that extension to it and you can easily access that financial data. And so we do have an application, but I don't consider the CLI like as much as an application to pay for. I consider it more as an exploration tool to see what data we have accessible on the platform. Now, what we've been working on last year as well is on the Terminal Pro, and that is an application that basically leverages the platform, the data integrations that we already connected, and we showed those on the Pro. And as I mentioned to you before, in these cases, the ones that we show, we actually pay for the right to show that data. And we pay for redistribution as well because we want the users to be able to download it, but also allow access to it through our Excel add-in. So in that way, the application is more closed source because the Terminal Pro code and the Excel add-in code is not open source right now.
Right. And part of that's related to the bundling of the data.
Correct.
That originally you kind of bring your own key, but now you can bundle that into a commercial license.
That is exactly correct. Yep. So on the Pro, one of the things that we want to do is allow you to set your API keys in terms of like a visualization. But in those instances, we will tell you like, look, this is your API key. It's up to you to have the rights with the company. And the reason why we do that is because some of the clients, design partners that we are talking with, let's say that they are already paying for a data vendor, right? But the data is so niche, it doesn't make sense for us to pay for all the users to have access to this data when this company is the only one that is paying to this vendor already. So we can just bring the integration that is already built on the platform and we just say, okay, if you want access to it, you just add your API key and the data becomes part of a widget collection that you can bring to your dashboards. But, you know, you are responsible for that contract.
So at what point did you change the name? And maybe as you talk about that, you can address the fact that the enthusiasm around investing has also changed some. The GameStop madness has kind of waned. Have you viewed that from the perspective of your community? Has your community changed along with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the name changed because we're raising money. So GameStop Terminal was until we started the conversation with our lead investor, OSS Capital, in specific Joseph Jack's partner. And so we wanted a name that was less meme-y, which made sense if we wanted to build a business. And when we raised money, it wasn't just me. So James, which was one of the first contributors of the project, when I was like having so much like tickets being created and so many, like I didn't have enough time. So, and James was one of the most active developers of the product, like in the first like 1-2 weeks being out, and he saw it on Reddit and he was developing a lot and he was reacting well to feedback. He was fast at coding. So I just messaged him, look, do you want to be a maintainer of this project with me? Because I actually don't have the time it takes for me to add features. And so I didn't know anything about him. I'd never seen him, never spoke with him. So he was just like, you know, I just want help. You know, look, I'm desperate. I need help. And this guy replies to me and he says, yeah, sure. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And he started like doing a lot. And then I got to know him. And it turns out that he was like finalizing a PhD in quantum physics. So like a super, super smart dude. And it just happened that it was the perfect timing for him because the labs were shut because of COVID. So he had a lot of free time. And so, you know, I got lucky. But anyway, so after, like, you know, I made it open source, he was with me on this journey. And we were talking, like, even more than we did with our wives, you know. And so when we raised money and we said, okay, we need to change name. And we were like, you know, I mean, he was an investor in GameStop as well. And so was I. And so we said, oh, you know, we should keep the tradition of naming the company with something related with where we are invested. And both of us at the time were losing a lot of money on BlackBerry. And the BlackBerry ticker is BB. And then because of open, because the code was open source, we said, oh, what about OpenBB?
I had other assumptions on where the BB came from.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I can assume that. We actually have that on the website, just to be clear about the story. We have like some docs saying that, okay, here's the origin story. And this is like, we've done that like very early on to say like, look, this is actually the main story. And actually to reply to your question around like the community, there wasn't actually a very big backlash, I think, like, which you could think that could be because GameStop Terminal is like feels like more retail investor. But I think that it wasn't because they understood that like we raised money and that the project was going to be better over time, because they understood that, you know, we're spending like all of our spare time on it. We weren't making any money, not even thinking about monetizing that product anytime. So yeah, there wasn't a lot of backlash at all.
Well, I guess more about how has your user base evolved? You know, I wonder if some retail investors that were really active have maybe moved on to other things. And have you found more professional investors over time?
100%, yeah. I think that most of, on the terminal, we have like under like 10,000 monthly users usually, but most of those are actually not retail. And I actually have this strong opinion that there's no big market for investment research on the retail side. So I think there's a big market when we talk about execution, like apps like Robinhood, they do really well because of this payment forward the flow. So, you know, they are like charging to you by the price that they give like to a Citadel for a clearhouse. And so I think that model is incredible because you don't see that you're being charged. It's like kind of Amazon when you think, I don't pay for the delivery costs, you know, but like if the price is higher, you know, does it really matter? Anyway, that model is different because you need it in order to do transactions. And basically you'd prefer to have like zero fees on your broker than none. So that's a very successful model. But in terms of research, people actually do not spend a lot of time doing research unless they are managing money from someone and they need to explain, okay, why did you put this capital onto Palantir? Why did you put this capital onto, you know, what's your thesis? And you need to justify it because, again, it's not your money. But what I see a lot of retail investors doing is like, oh, X told me to put money on Z. And so they do it, you know. Or I saw a tweet from someone that has like 100,000 followers and they put money. And so the research process is actually very limited.
You mentioned James. Are there others? I imagine as you're building the company, you might have uniquely drawn from this quickly growing community.
Yeah, there was someone else that started also really early with us, which was like a director at Workday. So that person was actually made the repo be much more nicer to interact with. So I didn't have like a lot of experience in terms of like big code architectures, because at the time I had only like, I think, 2 years of software engineer or so. And so he brought like the black linter, commit hooks, CI, CD, the repo became much better, and even in terms of like structure. And that was like, that improved a lot and invited more people to contribute, because the repo was more like standard across. Because at some point, you know, you could see that like the code that was written by me versus different people. And so we kind of made it uniformalized, and then we had to spend a bit more time on the reviews, but the code was more uniform. So Artem was actually really important on that at the early days. And so when we raised money, he became kind of one of our advisors of the company. And still today, we talk with him like pretty much on a weekly basis about like progress. He also brought in one of our like coolest features at the time, very early on, which is the capability to create a template of a report to do research and then basically just run it using this paper mill solution from Netflix. And this was really cool because he built it for himself as well to streamline his investment research process. So yeah, Artem was a big like contributor. There were a few other big ones. Most of them, we ended up hiring them when we raised money. So now they're part of the team.
I mostly think about contributions being for features, and this idea that you could just bring kind of process, contributing kind of process and standardization is really interesting. And the fact that it could then unlock other contributions is also really valuable. Although I imagine you need a lot of buy-in, I guess, from you. Those are big changes, I guess. Standardization is a big change.
And there was backlash. There was one very active contributor that stopped contributing to the project because he didn't want that. He needed to spend time on the formatting. He saw it as being like slowing him down early. But like, we are looking not just for the next week, but for the next like years, you know, like it's okay now that it's like, you know, 20, 30 people are acting on the project, but when it's 100, 200, like then if someone adds, if there's no way to basically standardize that, like it's going to be very hard to read the code. And because we're like at the time we're thinking about, okay, if this ever becomes a business. And so Artem actually did this the very nice way. He actually sent me a big email and he said like, look, your project is literally what I've been looking for. I'm starting to use it for my own processes. But because I have like 15 years of experience at Workday as a DevOps like director, like the project lacks the structure that I'm used to. And so I want to propose this, but this is a big change. And so I understand if you don't want to bring it up, but if you don't, it's okay. I'll just fork the project and I'll incorporate this to a different fork. But otherwise, if you want, I can propose these changes. And I went through them and I was like, you know, weighing the ins and cons, like the pros and cons, like the pros were so much bigger than the cons. And even when I looked at other projects, I understood that, like, you know, this is actually the right thing to do. It's just that I didn't have the experience to bring it up first. So I thank him for his changes. And I said, like, you know, let's do it. This is a really good idea. And we'll put the project in a much better state for new people to contribute. And in hindsight, like, it was the perfect decision.
The people you bring up, James, Artem, yourself, they don't work on Wall Street. Maybe you could kind of articulate for us, you know, what's the archetype of folks who are initially attracted to OpenBB? It sounds like grad students are really popular group.
So Artem actually had worked at Wealthfront for like 4 or 5 years. So he actually had financial experience. James was doing PhD in quantum physics, and like a typical like path of a quantum physics student, like PhD student, is like, you know, finance. So he was actually looking for a job in finance. That's why he started contributing to the project. But yeah, so at the time, I would say that we didn't really have a lot of analytics. So like we had a lot of downloads and stuff, and we didn't even track that, because in hindsight, like I should have done that much earlier, but we only introduced like analytics way later on, you know? And so I didn't really know a lot, only from people that I was speaking from the community. And yeah, there was like, if I were to do pools, there was like students. It was like a big, big, big amount of students. Then there was a lot of retail investors. But retail investors, they didn't spend a lot of time with it. And it was more of a toy project where they used it and then they churned pretty quick, because again, retail investors don't spend a lot of time doing research. And when they do, they pay like, you know, $10 for a Coifin or a Fay app or something like that to just do something quick. Even most of the execution platforms like Robinhood, they allow enough of research that they need, you know, just to basically see the stock price and then put an order in, you know, they don't spend a lot of time. And then the other one, the other group that was actually very active was these analysts or like consultants at these like JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and even like people like at bigger companies like BlackRock or Blackstone were using it on their own, like on the weekends or after hours, and they were just like trying to understand the project and how it was like structured and how they could get access to the financial data to work on their own models on their spare time.
That's so cool. And makes sense. Professionals who had these tools at work and wanted them at home.
So one person that actually surprised me a lot worked at Bloomberg, because I was excited about AI. So one of the menus that I added early on was the forecasting menu. And so I basically brought in like famous libraries like Nixtla to do like machine learning and AI on top of like financial time series, but all any other data that you had. So you could try to predict the stock price of Palantir using like the SP 500 financial time series, using like analyst estimates or any other data. And that was really cool because it's all built in Python, and like, you know, Python and AI, like, you know, is the perfect like language for that. And so this person like reached out to me, and she worked at Bloomberg, the senior machine learning engineer or something. And she was like, "Oh, do you mind if I like work on OpenBB?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, sure. But I mean, you know, let's have a conversation." And I chat with her, and I was like, "You know, why don't you do it at like Bloomberg? You know, because they have this tool called BigQuant, which is, for me, it's probably one of their best offerings. It's like this Python interface to have access to all of the data that Bloomberg offers to these, their BQL language. And the reason why she wasn't working on it is because the language that Bloomberg uses is very outdated. And so, you know, we're talking about like, I think Fortran or like C++, and to do like machine learning is not like not ideal. Because today, if you learn about like, you know, AI machine learning, we're talking about like Python is what people used to teach. And so she just wanted to use OpenBB because it was based in Python. And I was like, you know, that's fascinating.
So that was where I wanted to go next, was AI. You started OpenBB before the kind of generative AI boom. What's the roadmap or kind of your vision for AI in OpenBB? Sounds like there's already some forecasting in there.
The forecasting has actually been even before it was open source, because I was already excited about the topic. But with the generative AI in specific, we actually have a really exciting like roadmap, because we think that the fact that we have a platform that allows to bring AI as easily as it does is a very big value added. And so I actually wrote about this on Twitter, that like I have this big prediction that I think that like LLMs will become a commodity, and all the firms will have like either a fine-tune LLMs or even small language models to do very, very specific tasks, you know? So they are trained on proprietary data sets that they may have internally or even connected with like warehouse instances like Snowflake or ClickHouse or Superbase, and basically trained on their own internal data. And basically then the analysts on the team or asset managers can interact with that proprietary version, which is like, you know, just running locally. There's no outside requests, because security is a big thing in this and the financial industry. And so one thing that we are working on the pro is allowing you to bring your own Copilot into that interface. So it's not just about the data that first we allow you to have access to, but we also allow you to bring any other like data set that you want as form of a widget, whether you want to build the extension yourself using the open source architecture of the platform, or whether you want to connect with the database. You can do that through the pro today, even though the pro is early alpha, you can already do that. But one thing that we are working on this quarter is actually being able to bring your own Copilot. And being able to bring your own Copilot, which you can interact from the pro interface, but also allowing access to all of the data that the pro is displaying. So basically, you have a financial analyst right at your fingertips that you can have a discussion with when you are looking at doing due diligence on a ticker.
Didier, we're approaching our time here. Anything you wanted to cover that we didn't cover today?
We are like now in early alpha on Terminal Pro. We have more than 5,000 people on the wait list. We are going to start rolling out access. Like by the time this is live, we probably rolled out access to quite a few people. But yeah, I'd suggest everyone that listens to the podcast to give it a try, the Terminal Pro and Excel add-in. And if they have any feedback, they can reach out to me on LinkedIn or on Twitter. I'm most active on Twitter under DD_Lopsch. And yeah, anyone can message me. I'm always happy to have a chat.
Any favorite stock tips you've got at the moment?
No, because I kept doing like research, but now like we have so much things to do. I'm actually in the process of also moving to New York to be like closer to customers. So I actually sold all that my investments, and I'm like, you know, I don't want to be like, I just want fully focused on OpenBB, because at the end of the day, that's my biggest investment. I spent like all the time I have on it, and I felt like doing research and investing was distracting me slightly, even though I have like a long view. So when I invest, I don't really look back, but just the having that on the back of my mind that, okay, I need to check how all this is performing, like even with the Bitcoin, which is something that I was investing in, like, you know, I just prefer to sell. And it's like, you know, for now, I'll do it after.
Congrats on an exciting several years. And thanks so much for the contribution. I mean, this is a big thing that we all get access to now. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
You can subscribe to the podcast and check out our community Slack and newsletter at contributor.fyi. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, I'm Eric Anderson, and this has been Contributor.